This is Bringing the Darkness to the Light with Catherine Nadal, professional psychic medium.
Today's guest is Doug Sampson, a UK drummer known for his work in Iron Maiden and the band Air Force. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Hello there.
Hi. How are you? Good to meet you again. Wow. Yeah, it is really a pleasure. You know, it is a connection that I made to interview you through Michael Brandvold. So I give him a lot of gratitude for that. You've had a busy career. You know, I was reading about you, and Iron Maiden is one of my all-time favorite bands. Every time they come through New York, my cousins and I get tickets. Of course, we have tickets already for their September show. So you'll have to tell me what Iron Maiden was like in 1978.
Well, it's a bit different than it is today. It was a different scene. It was just coming up. There was punk was all the rage. And we were coming up. The heavy metal scene was there. When we first started gigging, people were flocking to our gigs. So, you know, we'd start off with like 40 people, the next week, 100 people. Then it just got more and more popular, you know. So we got a following very quickly. We went through the ranks very fast. And so within 6 months, we were doing quite a lot of gigs. It was such a new thing. All the audiences were all young. The governors of the pub used to go around turfing out the youngsters because they shouldn't even have been in the pub, you know, all sneaking in to watch us. We didn't charge anything in the early days. So, everybody was really hungry for what we were doing. A lot of bands were doing similar stuff, Van Halen and Black Sabbath and all that, but they were older than us. This was what was called in the end the new wave of British heavy metal. So, yes, it was a hectic time, I must admit. Yeah.
So when you say you guys were young, what were you, like 17, 18 yourselves?
I was older than that. I was about 20, but Steve was about 20-odd. Yeah, it was all in the sort of early 20s when we got started Iron Maiden at that time. Iron Maiden was going before then, you know, it was going from 1975, and I joined about 78. So it had 3 years, but there's so many different changes of personnel. And it was just Dave and Steve. And Steve asked me to join. So there was just the three of us. That was before Paul even joined. So that's all it was, just three of us at the time.
Wow, it's so exciting. So when you think being young like that, what was the family support when you're young like that? You know, what was the expectation? Was your family like, oh, this is great, or you should be getting a job?
No, my family was more, like my mother, it was more like, oh, why don't you get a proper day job, you know? Because my brother had already had gone through the band thing, so she was a bit fed up with it the time I'd gone into it. No, I can't say she was over moon about me going into the music business. No.
Yes, I can understand that. So being from the UK, what was the club scene like? Because you said that you were just starting out, or Iron Maiden was kind of new at the time. So your venues were probably more like smaller clubs or bars, right? What was the biggest venue that you were playing when you were playing with them?
We were starting off with, there was plenty of places to play in them days. It was, all the kids were very hungry for this, you know, for the music. So there was a lot of places to play. We got a job, we got a gig with Motorhead. Lemmy offered a job to back him at a place called The Music Machine. They weren't called Motorhead because it was a warm-up gig. I can't remember the name, what they called themselves, but he asked us to back him. And that was really like opened the floodgates because a lot more people got to see us, you know, on that one gig. It started to snowball sort of thing. I think another time we played the Marquee, which was a big famous club in Wardour Street. Jimi Hendrix had played there years ago, and The Who, Zeppelin, Pink Floyd. So we got our headline down there, and that's where we finally got our EMI record deal from that night down there.
So exciting. I never got a chance to meet Lemmy, but a lot of people I know knew him. The very young Lemmy, what was that experience like? You're headlining for him, so, you know, he was following you guys. So were there things that you felt that you picked up from watching him play or being billed alongside of them?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he asked us if we'd back him. We were really over the moon. I mean, I've got to realize that I was about 15 when Lemmy was with Hawkwind. So he was a little bit older than us. And so he was like, like on a pedestal, really. I think, oh, God, I can't believe it. So when he offered us a job to go on first before them, we was really taken back. It was always the same, Lemmy. He was right up to the day he died. He was just the same sort of bloke, you know. Yeah, great character. Yeah.
Wow. So BMI record deal. Did you feel a little relieved getting that, you know, the idea of saying, okay, maybe I could really make a career for myself or a lifetime in music for myself? Or did you think, you know, it's a fleeting moment, let me just, was it not too deep thinking?
I don't know, really. At the time, we wasn't that experienced or anything. And I've known a lot of bands that have had record deals that just amount to nothing, you know. So I was all mixed feelings. I know it was a good record deal and a good record company, but I wasn't sort of too over the moon, like madly excited, because I know how these things can go, you know. But yeah, it was a good thing. But
wow. So stepping away from the band, what were your next steps? What were you thinking after doing the year with Iron Maiden?
Well, afterwards, I stepped away from music for a little while. I went into a different business for a short time to have a rest from it. And then I met up with an old friend of mine, Bruce Steve, actually. Steve had introduced us to a guitarist. And I suppose a few years went, but in the end, we got some. He asked me to do a bit of recording with him. He had a band called EL34, my friend Chop Pittman. He said, will you do a bit of recording with us? We'd done a bit of recording and that, and it was going quite well. You know, we was working well together. Tony Hatton was the bass player, and we actually took it, and Steve had a listen to it, and he said, well, yeah, worth pursuing it. So what we decided to do was get a new singer in the band. And we decided, and I think it was the singer was my brother, and he was singing for us, and he came up with a name. Let's call it Air Force. And that's how it stayed from about 85, 86 onwards. We put the band on ice about in the 90s. A couple of members wanted to go off and do family things and different projects with like work-wise and that. So we put it on ice for a while. And then, I don't know, but it was about 2013, 14. We had a chap called Erwin Lucas, a Dutch chap, and he said that he wanted to bring out an album with all ex-Iron Maiden members. So that would be all their projects that they'd done. So we put a couple of songs from the previously, put it on the album, and it went really well. People were asking, who's this band Air Force, you know? So we said, well, let's get the band together and do a few gigs, see how it goes. So we got the band together, got another singer in, and Dillian Onadolf, and it just took off. We'd done the first gig, and I thought, yeah, this is... I'm looking around at the audience, and they're going wild. I thought, this is good. So we started doing a few gigs, and it just seemed to grow and grow. But it wasn't really our intentions. We didn't really think it would amount to much, but it's just the way things work. We're probably a lot more successful on this time than we were originally when we got Air Force together. It's a bit strange, really.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you mentioned 1985 and you started out as Air Force, you stayed heavy metal, right? You didn't go hard rock. You stayed heavy metal. And then you took a break. When did you decide to get back again? You said during the 90s you were doing family things, but when was this? Like, was it early 2000s or...
Yeah, it would have been about because we were jamming together and messing about, but we hadn't really put our heads together to get the band back together. It must have been about 2014, I suppose, when we thought we'd go in the studio and work all the songs out. We must have been in there for about 6 months rehearsing before we come out. So, yeah, it was quite a long break. But, Chop had different incarnations of Air Force. He had a couple of different people in it, but the original lineup we didn't do till about 2014, I suppose.
That's great. So that was technically really like a 20-year break.
Yeah.
So it looks like your fans waited for you. because you got such a great response.
We've made a lot new fan base now. You know, it's different ages, even people that like weren't even born on our fans. It's really strange how it's all come together again. You know.
Yes, I do know that. That is called the power of the internet and the power of social media. Because, because people's nephews and children are now rocking out to stuff that we were rocking out to 30 or 40 years ago.
That is completely true. Because when in the 80s, when we got the band together, there was no internet. There was no social media. So it was very hard to get your message out. You had to just play every club in England to get it out. But it made life so much easier because you could do a song and stick it on the internet and people will pick up on it. If it's good and people like it, they will pick up on it. And that's basically what happened to us. And that's how it's all sort of, it helped a lot. It certainly helped a lot.
Wow, that's so great. I want to discuss some of the songs that we were selecting for this interview. The first song that we selected was called Life Turns to Dust. Tell me about that one.
Well, that's one of the earlier ones of this incarnation of Air Force. We wrote this one, and it's basically about how life works out. It's life turns to dust. And it's just a simple analogy of how life is. You know, you live your life, you die, you turn to dust. And it's quite simple, but it's a good song. It's a good crowd pleaser. People really enjoy this. So I do like that one. It comes straight after the first opening song, which is Fight, and we always drop the tempo down for this one, and that really gets people listening. So they know we're not just a like fast moving band. We can slow things right down. It's one of my favorites.
Very good. Well, we're going to play it now. Life Turns to Dust by Air Force.
We'll be right back.
You know, it's interesting when we were just talking about that song. A long time passes sometimes. You know, you look back and you say, wow, that feels like yesterday when I was in Iron Maiden, you know, and all of the people that you've met in your life. What would you say, even before Iron Maiden, was a musical influence to you? Like being a drummer, was it another drummer? Was it a particular band? Well, where did the inspiration come from originally?
I've been interested in music since I was a very small child. I can remember when the Beatles first come out and started doing hits, started charting. And so I was always focused on Ringo Starr because I just loved drums. My parents bought me a little toy kit, you know. I can remember knocking hell out of that. But the next, I suppose, was The Who with Keith Moon. I mean, I was just completely blown away when I saw it, the way he played. So I'm sort of the old school. All my heroes are from the old times. I mean, I love what's the new bands and that, but they are the ones that really set me on the track to doing what I'm doing now. Another favourite drummer, probably a bit older, would be Phil Taylor out of Mohead. I thought, brilliant, you know, brilliant. So, yeah, it's quite a cross-section. But I think as a youngster, it would have been bands like The Who, really, that really got me thinking about music seriously, sort of thing.
Was your family musical at all? Did they play music themselves or were they instrumental?
I think my mother, when she was younger, was a singer. My father played a violin, but my brother was in bands. He was in a band called Sam Apple Pie. Then he went and joined a band called Atomic Rooster. So he's always been in the music business. So I was brought up with it. We always had a house full of hairies, like blokes with long hair. You know, it was just like the way I was. So it was in me for all my life, because my brother's a lot older than me. He's 8 years older than me. So when I was a kid, I could see all these geezers coming and going. So I was brought up with it, really, in a musical environment. Yeah.
That's so cool. So kind of what area were you growing up in? Some neighborhoods, I know, like in England, you probably have certain neighborhoods that are more of what you would find to be places where music people would hang out. Going back to the 80s, I was hanging out in the Village, you know. So, you know, here in New York City, certain neighborhoods you would find different music in. So what was it like in England for you?
Well, I come from a place called Walthamstow. So there was a lot of places around that area to play. And Steve Harris lived about 4 or 5 miles up the road in a place called Leytonstone. So, and there was not far from the Cart and Horses, which is where Iron Maiden basically started gigging. So we all used to go down to Cart and Horses, which is still now a birthplace of Iron Maiden. It's a big pub there that's like a museum to Iron Maiden now. And so that's where we used to meet up, and that's where we got to know each other, you know, and that's where people used to meet up and join different bands and things like that. But I met Steve through my first band was called Smiler, and Steve was the bass player for Smiler, and that's how we first met. That was about 1970. That was early 1975. Later on, he left to form Iron Maiden. But when I joined Smiler, it was about April or so, I suppose. Yeah, we'd done a lot of gigs with Smiler, but it was a blues rock band. It wasn't Iron Maiden. It was not Iron Maiden. Steve had this idea. He wanted to do what he wanted to do. So even though the band was good, we left. Steve left and formed Iron Maiden. I didn't go in with it. He asked me to go, but at the time I said no. I'd left Smiler. I said no. I didn't want to go. I didn't want to do any more. I didn't want to be in a band at that particular time. I want to get myself working and sorting myself out. So he went off and formed Iron Maiden. He was, I suppose, about 3 years later, he come back again. He said, well, are you ready to join now? I said, yeah, sure.
That's a great story. Wow. I love to hear that, because when you think back in time, it feels like yesterday probably for you, you know, and you realize how fast life is, you know, how quick things go in life, you know. It's funny because I want to talk about the next song. When I was talking about how my cousins and I always get tickets for Iron Maiden, one of the highlights of it is when we start seeing all the creatures come out on stage, you know, Eddie all of that. You know, it's really grown over time, you know, their whole kind of, you know, it's like watching a Broadway play at some points, It's kind of a theme to Iron Maiden, I would have to say, is by having those creatures in it. It's like a character and a story. When we talk about the next song, Cursed Moon, tell me about that.
It's more or less like a werewolf story. Like you're saying, it is like a werewolf story, how he's fighting with himself, and then suddenly the moon, and he transforms and he's got no control over it. It's basically that kind of idea. And so, it's just a traditional like werewolf story, really. But we've got a video that goes with it, like an animation video, which sort of goes really well with it. It's slightly different to the sort of songs that we do. So I really like that. It's got a different angle to it.
So in Air Force, who does most of the writing?
Chop comes up with some ideas, or Tony might come up with an idea, and we all work together to get it to happen to Air Force's standard, like not standard, but to our the way we work, you know. So it sounds like Air Force and doesn't sound like anybody else. But obviously with our influences always come out. You've got people like Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, except you can hear all these, and Saxon, you can hear all these things, but we don't go out to copy them. It's just the way it works.
Absolutely. It's a familiar sound in that whole grouping. Wow. We're going to play Cursed Moon right now.
We'll be right back.
You know, it's interesting with talking about Cursed Moon and talking about lyrics. As a band, are you kind of fans of the horror genre, or are you not horror movie followers, or or that has nothing to do with it?
With the films, did you say?
Yeah, horror movies, because there's a big...
Yeah,
you know, it's so interesting, because I have a friend named Mike Schiff, and he actually made a movie called The History of Metal and Horror. And he has interviewed about 59 or 60 guys like Anthrax and Alice Cooper, of course, and Rob Zombie. And there's a correlation between the heavy metal music and the horror music. And the same for the guys that make the horror movies. They have kind of a correlation with heavy metal music. So it kind of goes hand in hand. How is it for Air Force, or the band members in Air Force?
Yeah, I mean, we will pick up on a subject and think, oh, we were actually working on one that's about gladiators, blood and sand, you know, and things like that. So we pick out different things. We have got another song on this album called The Fury, which is basically like a war theme, based on a film, really, you know. So, yeah, I suppose films and historic events, things like that, we pick up on, definitely.
That's so great. All right, good. You know, the next song is named Heroes. What is that about, that song?
This song's about people, that young people going off to war, especially foreign conflicts. I don't really know what they're fighting for, and coming home in boxes, basically. Whereas, you know, like it's a realization of what war is. You know, it's not, sometimes you're in a war and it's not really down to you or whatever, and the youngsters are sort of sent off to war and they probably don't even know what they're fighting for, and they end up coming home in body bags and that. So that's basically what it's about. We don't want it to be political, it's just the fact, you know, that this is what happens to people, you know, what war's all about, really, you know.
Yes, well, I totally understand that. I went to Iraq for a year. So we lost five guys in my division. So that is a very true statement, what you're saying. And a lot of them are very, very young when they go over. So thank you for doing that song. We're going to play Heroes right now. I wanted to ask you about the band name, because it's Air Force. How did your brother kind of come up with that name, Air Force?
I don't know, really. It's a strange one. He just said I don't know why, what was in his mind when he said it. Because I remember another band that was around called Ginger Baker's Air Force. So I don't know if he'd realised that or to, but I've got no idea. We just liked it. We thought, it suits us. You know, it's got that military sort of angle to it. And like Chop's father was a Lancaster in the war, so we all had that connection to like military and that. And we've always had a great respect for military. It was one of our passions. But none of us have been in service. None of us have been in the services at all. But we've all had a passion for the military services. Yeah, and we were great respect for them.
Wow. Well, thank you. You know, naming of bands is always very interesting. Do you know how Iron Maiden came up with their name? Did they kind of ever give you the scoop? Or
I think what Steve would say to you is it's an ancient torture mechanism called the Iron Maiden. It was like a coffin, and it had all like spikes in it. And they used to put the poor sod inside this and shut the lid down. I think that's what it is, and that was the Iron Maiden, and all the spikes would go in, piercing the body. So that is what Iron Maiden is. It wasn't to do with a political leader or anything else. It was to do with this torture implement.
Wow. Well, that name has lasted. You know, they have carried on that name for a long time. So, wow, you don't have to go very far when someone says, I got tickets for Iron, and they turn around and they say Maiden. Like, it goes hand in hand. They know for sure. So tell me about Air Force. Like, where are we going to be seeing you? I know that Brave Words Records has your album. I was reading online that the album was released in February of 2025, and the album was called Acts of Madness.
Yes, Acts of Madness, yes.
And I was reading something about The Fury. Is that just a single off of that?
It is, yeah. We've done a video with that. And then the last one is Strange World.
Yes, that's right. But before we talk about that song, I want to talk about how people can find you, social media, any upcoming events, or what's the plan for the rest of 2026 into 2027?
Well, because we've just gone over to Brave Words, we've got a tour coming up in November. Most of the big tours are booked up now. So we've got a tour for November, and that's with three British bands. Well, I think it's Alcatraz, Raven, and Girls' School. We're on the bill, and we shall be touring up and down the UK. I don't know what plans Giles has got for us for next year, but we'll be looking forward to it, whatever it is.
Wow, that's exciting. I interviewed a few of the guys from Alcatraz. They're really great.
Oh, right.
I know all of those guys. Yeah, and Girls' School is always rocking it out. Girls' School plays very often with Bangler Choir with my friend David Reese. So I think he's toured with them within the last year as well.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you have stuff coming up. Tell us about your social media. How can the fans contact you?
I couldn't tell you the actual address, but if you just go on to Air Force Rock Band, you will find it. It comes up quite easily. Yeah, I don't know the web addresses. I just go into them. I've got them all automatically on my phone, so I can't spiel them off, so to speak. But if you put in Air Force Rock Band, it should come up.
Okay, good. So probably on Facebook, Instagram.
Instagram.
Bandcamp, probably all of those. All right.
Great. All the music outlets as well. We're on all of them as well.
Yes, yeah. All the streaming. Spotify, Apple Music, all of that. That's great. Yeah. All right, good. Yeah. So tell me about Strange World, because I was reading that it's a cover of the Iron Maiden classic. Have you done a video for it?
Yes, we've done a computerized video that's going down really well. When we decided to do the song, we didn't want it to be the same as the Iron Maiden version. because I think that's too perfect. We didn't. We've done our own version, an Air Force version, same lyrics, but it's different to the original. That's why I wanted it. I didn't want to do a copy of it. Yeah, and the video has come up really well. That's really worth a watch. That should be out on YouTube, and that and so there's that is definitely worth a watch. I recommend it.
Wow, great. Have you gotten any feedback from the guys in Iron Maiden? Like, you know, if they've heard it or what they think of it?
Well, I've only spoke to Steve about it. He was quite knocked out about it. He said, oh, it's really great. He loved the song and the video that goes with it. He said, oh, no, it's really good. But I haven't spoke to any others about it, but I know he was impressed. Yeah.
Wow, that's really cool. That could only help promote them, you know? So,
yeah,
exactly. It's a double promotion. Very good. So we're going to play Strange World as we roll out the interview. I want to say thank you again for sitting with me today, Doug Sampson, drummer of Air Force, the band. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Just is at the play.
You have been listening to Bringing the Darkness to the Light with Catherine Nadal, professional psychic medium, Dream Central Station, LLC. My audio editor is Al Hemberger at the Loft Recording Studios in Bronxville, New York. This is WNEW 102.7 FM Radio.